The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back, everyone. Nick the Voice here, joined tonight by Jason Kelly, Doug Acheson, and Terry Cushman Jr. We are the Bastards of Boston, and we're jumping right into it with some more discussion on the Ketel Marte trade rumors. Now, this could very well be the last time we discuss this, because Mike Hazen had some pretty interesting words about a potential Marte trade. "We're very likely to put an end to this shortly," was the direct quote, which is extremely ominous. They are in an interesting position, as we know. Arizona suddenly emerged not too long ago as a potential spot for Bregman, of all people. We heard the behind the scenes that the Marte asking price was pretty steep. And now, I mean, there have been some rumors about Marte's personality behind the scenes, and he just posted on Instagram not too long ago, seeming to troll people who are saying that he may be a bad teammate by posting a picture of himself with Corbin Carroll, because obviously bad teammates never smile with their teammates, right? That's all it really takes. Jason, we'll start with you, go to Doug, then Terry, then myself. How are you feeling about the entire room temperature read on the Marte situation?
Yeah, it's interesting because Hazen sort of muddied the waters a little bit with that comment because, okay, we think this thing's going to come to an end imminently. Well, what does that mean? Meaning you're going to trade him tomorrow? Or are you going to come out and say, you know what, none of your offers were good enough, and by the way, we're signing Alex Bregman, so we're going to keep Marte as well? Like, it could go either direction. I'm sure he has plenty of suitors for Ketel Marte. I mean, how could he not? Guy's a switch-hitting superstar second baseman. He's probably the best second baseman in the league. So I'm sure he's got plenty of offers, but if he's now talking with Bregman's camp and they think they're close on something, you know, I know Arizona's in a slight rebuild, but they still have a lot of talent on that roster. And they've got some young talent coming up too with guys like Jordan Lawler. So he might just say, you know what, F it. Like, your offers weren't good enough. And if we can land a guy like Alex Bregman here, even after blowing things up at the trade deadline, we don't have to trade Ketel Marte. And I do wonder if Marte's Instagram post was a bit of trolling, because maybe he's been told internally, hey, you know what? We're not trading you. We're going to go out. We're going to spend some money. We're going to put some guys around you, and we're going to make another run at this. And don't worry about all the smoke about the, you know, bad teammate or any of that. Like, you know, we're committed to you, and we're going to do this. So maybe that's why he felt the need to post and say, look, yeah, everyone says I'm going to be traded because I'm this horrible guy, but turns out maybe I'm just staying, and I'll hit 35 bombs for Arizona next year, and we'll go back to the playoffs. So it's really interesting. I, for one, I think that he's probably going to stay put. I just, it never really made sense to me from the start, because he's on a team-friendly deal, and they just gave him that extension. So, yeah, it's, you know, I get it. You blow up your team, you know, you go into sell mode, you float him out there to see what you can get. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's going to be hard to replace that kind of talent, even with, you know, a number one, number two prospect, whatever. So I think Hayes is smart enough to recognize what he's got. And I think if he can be assured by Lavolo and other guys in the room that, hey, he's really not a problem, it's okay, you can keep him, and, you know, we can still win with this guy, then I think he'll just, you know, keep his cards on the table and say, no, we're going to keep him, we're all set, and we're going to chase some other big fish. So as of right now, I think Marte's staying put.
Yeah, I do agree that the post makes it seem like he's staying, right? Posting with a teammate makes it seem like he's coming back, even though people said he's a bad teammate, they still want him back. That's what it seems like. But I would definitely still be open to trading for him. I don't really care about the bad teammate stuff. I don't know, some of that stuff, who knows? But I think, you know, like you said, he's probably the second best, the best second baseman in the league, right? And That's what we need, is a second baseman. And if you have the chance to fill that spot with the best in the league, and, you know, in a deal that we could probably make without decimating our team, we have extra outfielders, we have Duran to move, we have Abreu to move. I think it's definitely the move to make still. You know, I'm a big fan. He's a great hitter. He's a great second baseman. He's, you know, he's a little older, but he's not out of his prime yet. He still has a couple years left. I don't think we're going in for, you know, we're not looking to get him for 6 years or anything. But, you know, he hits bombs in MLB The Show, so that rules too. But he just – I think it's the deal that should be made. I think it's the deal that would really help our team, probably more than any other player that we could bring in right now. I think he would help our team, besides like a number one pitcher, obviously, or something. But a position player that's available, I think he would be the number one guy that would help our team the most.
So Mike Hazen says, we're going to put an end to this soon. What is this? Like, what is this? You know, I don't, it's just, it seems like from a PR standpoint, they've handled this situation extremely poorly. He goes on to say, we need to focus our offseason. Again, my gut this whole time was that a trade wasn't going to happen, and it seems likely that that's the case, and we want to focus on the other things that we need to do. Hazen added, that was an end quote, but the writers added in that he basically said that the trade packages haven't been anywhere near the significant asking price that they've had. So my read on that, and then you had Marte basically saying today, you know, via Instagram, as you guys underscored, that, you know, he's kind of feels the need to defend himself, that he's a bad teammate or whatever. So it seems like there's some drama there. There's some PR that hasn't been very good. And there's a lot of Bregman rumors, which were discussed on the last show. Apparently, one of the more prominent Phoenix radio stations, one of their hosts, says it's essentially a done deal. When the dust settles, Alex Bregman will eventually be an Arizona Diamondback. And when I see those weird quotes from Hazen, who I would have thought was a little bit more seasoned than this. I mean, he's done a great job in Arizona, but it just sounds like they've kind of lost control of the script. They've kind of lost control of what they're trying to do out there. And I think that they're mad. I think Mike Hazen, my read on this is that Mike Hazen is mad that he has to keep Ketel Marte. And perhaps that Instagram post was Marte, you know, taking his W, you know, haha, now you have to keep me. And I don't like the way it's handled. And I don't like especially how Ketel Marte is handling it. Like, you can't say that that's the classy thing to do, you know? You can't say that there's any humility there. You know, he could have said something like, thank goodness, I love Arizona and this is where I want to be. And bringing a championship, you know, to this city and state is what's most important to me. He's not saying that, you know, there, I got defiance in that Instagram post. So, and then you look at Boston and what kind of a market this is, I think they'll eat him up. Look at how fast the fan base flipped on Jarren Duran. Look at how untradeable he was a year ago. Untouchable, I should say, in a trade. Nobody wanted to trade Jarren Duran, including me. I'm like, lock him up for 6 to 8 years. Just do it. Do it now. The same way two winters ago with Tristan Casas. I was like, what are we doing? Why are we not locking this guy up? You know, an easy 3,100 guy in a position that hasn't been very good for us for a while. And then look at how quickly the fan base flipped on him. you know? And so to bring a guy like Marte in, I think the best way to compare it would be David Price. He lost the fan base pretty quick, you know? And I love to point out with David Price, because I'm such a hater, and, you know, if I have the opportunity to bash David Price, I'm going to do it. But quiet as a church mouse in 2016, and then that next winter is when things all went sideways. And what the difference was David Ortiz was in that clubhouse for all of 2016. And then he retires. And then David Price starts running his mouth like the punk that he was. And so I don't know. I like the player. I like the bat. I like the stat lines that Ketel Marte can give you. But I'd much rather just go get Bo Bichette. Just go get Bo Bichette and, you know, and do it. You know, if the shoe's on the other foot, you could say, well, Alex Cora will keep him in line. And maybe he will, but I don't know that. And it's not like Ketel Marte is 27 years old, you know, at the front end of his prime. He's towards the tail end of it. So I see a lot of risk there. And I've been on the fence. And I think I'm at the point where I'm a hard no on Ketel Marte.
You know, I'm still in on the guy, but I don't blame anyone who's out. I think that your read of the situation is pretty accurate. I would agree with it in a lot of ways. Arizona has become kind of a circus all of a sudden this past month, and I don't think anyone really expected that. Obviously, the Marte trade rumors came as a surprise, I think, when they were initially put out there, but it made a lot of sense, you know, for the, you know, maybe if you could go out and trade a guy like this and fill in some gaps on your team and whatnot, blah, 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 you know, it would benefit you in the long run. And not having to trade him certainly gave Arizona a lot of leverage, which they're exercising right now. But I agree that those quotes that came out, it doesn't read like security, quite the opposite, right? It reads like insecurity. It reads like Hazen is a bit petulant, almost, that he didn't get the big offer that he wanted. He wanted to fleece the Red Sox or another team, whether it be for, you know, Early and Tolley and Meyer and anyone else, or another team's equivalent of those players. And he's upset that teams aren't budging. I don't know. But to, I don't know, sort of come out and have this almost victory lap about not trading a player, it doesn't come across like he got the outcome that he wanted. And it's possible that Marte still gets dealt before the 2026 season starts. But I don't know. It's just very odd. I agree. You know, the funny thing with that Instagram post that Marte did, I read it too fast when I first saw it. And I was like, oh, is Corbin Carroll not a good teammate? What's going on here? And then I reread it. I'm like, oh, no, that's that's not what he's saying at all. It's so weird to me, you know, when a 32-year-old multi-million-dollar athlete is taking little jabs like that on Instagram. And obviously everyone is allowed to do what they want. You know, these guys are human beings, and human beings, unfortunately, love social media. I mean, but, you know, we see certain players like Jazz Chisholm get into it with Red Sox personalities, like just happened not too long ago. And, you know, Ketel Marte is obviously not even close to the level of that, thank God. And an Instagram post, a snarky little, you know, hey, I'm actually a good teammate, take that type of post. I don't think it's necessarily a huge red flag, but it could be, you know. And I agree, whenever a player comes to Boston, the climate of the media, the climate of the fan base, it brings out the worst in some guys. It gets to players. David Price was a great parallel. I think, you know, you had the Dennis Eckersley thing, which blew up quite badly. You know, and suddenly the temperature read on a certain player completely shifts. You go from, oh my God, I love this guy, oh, I'm so glad we have him, to, uh-oh, this guy again, you know? And suddenly you go from an ace to a diva pretty fast. And you never know how that's going to impact a player's performance. With Price, it certainly didn't help from the looks of it. You know, it is funny, but I am still in on Marte, just because I think the Red Sox are so desperate, unfortunately. And that right there is kind of the problem, right, that Breslow has constructed for himself, is we need a massive impact bat at either second or third base. And you can either go out and pay Alex Bregman, You can go out. You can pay Bo Bichette. You could, I guess, go out and trade for Donovan, although he's hardly the bat that the two previous guys I just mentioned is, although he is a solid player. But there's no one more complete, I feel, on the market right now than Ketel Marte. And unfortunately, it seems like the asking price was just too steep, which I understand. But at the same time, I don't know. I would have loved him, but I'm sort of quickly coming to terms with the fact that this dude is going to remain in Arizona, because I do not think anyone is going to give Hazen the load of prospects that he's clearly looking for.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. And for the record, I think I'm pretty much out on Marte. I'm not 100% off the train yet, but I'm with Terry. I'd rather go the Bo Bichette route, because at the end of the day, Bo Bichette's out there just for money. You know, Ketel Marte, you got to give up prospects. You got to give up Connelly Early or Peyton Tolley or maybe even both. I mean, we've heard the asking price high. So you got to give up a package of prospects to get him. Bo Bichette, you just got to pay him. And Bo Bichette's 28, so he's 4 years younger. He's already said he's willing to move to second base. So I think he's already kind of showing you that he's a little bit more flexible of a teammate and a team player than maybe a guy like Marte is. The Instagram posts, I mean, you're right. All athletes do it. It's one of those things. I mean, Tristan Casas sent out a cryptic Instagram thing a couple months ago. And we were like, what the hell? Like, who the hell are you to talk? Like, you've been out for God knows how long. We don't know if you're going to like be the same guy when you come back. And you're posting cryptic Instagram things about, you know, I don't know, we need power hitters or something. Like it's too much. The Cam Schlittler stuff got out of hand. Like, he, you know, he keeps putting his foot in his mouth. The Jazz Chisholm thing the other night was hysterical. I mean, that was just, if I'm a Yankees fan, I'm sitting there going, why do we have this guy? So they all do it. It's, you know, it's just the way they express themselves now. I think, unfortunately, like to Terry's point, the days of guys just being like, nope, I'm going to do the right thing for my team. And, you know, I'm here to win and all this. Like, they don't talk that way anymore. They talk in cryptic, you know, social media posts, and, you know, they like to just do that to, you know, just put a little bit more kerosene on the fire. It's frustrating, but that's just the way they are. And if you have any doubts about Marte's and if he would fit in Boston, one guy you should look at is Glenn Ordway, who actually tweeted about him on this back on December 11th. But obviously, you know, he knows about the rumors, you know, Red Sox being tied to Ketel Marte. Glenn Ordway, a longtime radio host here in Boston, I guess now lives out in Arizona. And he tweeted out on December 11th, he goes, I keep on reading that the Red Sox are in on trading for Arizona's second baseman, Ketel Marte. He's a terrific player, but I'm not sure he's a good fit in Boston. I've watched him out here, and he's very sensitive to fans and media criticism and literally shuts down. Boston is a much tougher city. And he's right. I mean, Boston is a really hard place to play. And look, there's a lot of players who just don't come here because of that exact reason. They feel like the fans are too on top of you in that stadium. You know, we've had incidents in the past. Who was the center fielder? Adam Jones, center fielder for Baltimore, right? With the racist comments. Like, unfortunately, that still happens in Boston. It's a, you know, awful reality, but it's something that we haven't gotten rid of in our city yet. So there's a lot of guys that don't want to play here. And it's the same, you know, it's not just Boston. Yankee Stadium's the same way. There's a lot of guys that hate playing there too. Ask Sonny Gray. He didn't like it as much as he now denies that, but it ate him alive. These tougher markets, these bigger markets with the small stadiums and the rabid fan bases, it's not for everyone. And maybe Ketel Marte is just one of these guys where he would prefer to hide out in the desert in Arizona, where, quite frankly, no one really cares about baseball out there because it's nice weather and, you know, they're just hanging out in the mountains. Like, they don't care. They care about college football. They don't care about the Diamondbacks. So I think for all those reasons, it's just, it's better to go the Bo Bichette route. Or even, you know, not that this would be ideal, but if they get Bregman somehow, the Red Sox end up with Bregman and Myers your second baseman, and you want to do, you know, another platoon thing there as Cora loves to do, fine. I'm not sure I'm ready to give up more of these good pitching prospects and more of our farm system that continues to dip in the rankings for a guy who might be a complete mental case once he gets here. Because we went through the David Price thing. We've gone through Hanley Ramirez, Carl Crawford. Like, I think I'm good. Go the Bichette route. That's what I would prefer. Or at the very least, See if you can get Bregman, put Meyer at second. I prefer that. I don't really need the Red Sox trading for this guy.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Bichette is – the thing with Bichette is that means they have to spend money, right? I don't know if anyone trusts that they will do that, right? I mean, I don't know if anyone trusts that they're going to make a trade for Marte either, but it's just – I do agree that I wouldn't give up early for Marte. The even though I did say I would want to make that deal, the deal would have to be a good deal. I mean, it wouldn't have to be the right guys. I could put Duran in there. I could put Abreu in there, but the pitching, I definitely wouldn't give up early, and I wouldn't give up Toley. But you know, we'll see what the deal is. Maybe Sandoval, I could probably part ways with. But I mean, Marte is going to give you, you know. Say we sign Bichette and then you sign him to a big deal, and that's 6 years maybe. And, you know, we're bringing in Marte for a couple, right? And I feel like that is more what the management's going to be looking for, is shorter deals, you know, easier contracts to deal with, shorter deals. And, you know, you're still getting a great player out of it. I mean, he's, you know, one of the best hitters in the league. No one hits 300. He flirts right around 300 always. And you plug that. I think we really only need it plugged for a little bit until we have maybe Mayer playing second base. You know, so I don't think we really need a long-term deal there. I still would love Bichette, of course. Bichette's great. And if they spend the money for Bichette, I think that's a good sign, and I would love to see that. The Bregman thing, I think I would rather Marte than sign Bregman at this point.
A couple more things. So I referenced the David Price thing and the correlation of how he was fine when Ortiz was there, and then Ortiz retires and, you know, things kind of go off the tracks. And David Price, that first spring training, I don't think a lot of people remember this because it's probably not a top one or two controversy, but he did take a dig at Red Sox fans in an article with the Boston Globe, I think, one of the bigger Boston publications, and said something to the effect of Red Sox fans don't understand this or that. And I'm like, come on, bro. We'd won, what, three championships by then? But with the Ortiz factor in mind, if you bring in a guy like Ketel Marte, who in that clubhouse is going to keep him in line? Who's the veteran that's going to get in his face and be like, look, bro, clean it up? I don't think Duran can do it, and I don't think you'd want him to do it because he kind of can go off the rails too. The first baseman we just acquired there, Contreras, you know, he is a veteran type guy, but I just don't think he has the clout yet. You know, he doesn't have a whole clubhouse that's going to back him necessarily. You know, if he went toe-to-toe verbally with a guy like Marte, there's nobody. Roman Anthony's not going to tell Marte how to play baseball. So it's another thing to be concerned with. I guess Alex Cora would be the one guy, but you just don't know. And I don't think Alex Cora handled David Price very well. And, you know, the Devers thing is what it is. But yeah, and then look at another guy who's kind of not like necessarily at war with his top executive, but Bryce Harper, you know, there's some cryptic stuff going on there. But I think in Harper's case, even though I would still say that that's not a good look for him or Dombrowski, in Harper's case, he's going to turn it into a positive and he's going to go off, you know, so that's something Philly fans can be comfortable with. And I think at the end of the day, they're two grown men. You know, if Philadelphia is leading the National League East come June, all will be fine, I would say. But I just think there would be a ton of remorse there. There could be a ton of remorse. And I just, you know, I'm tired of dealing with things that have red flags. Having said this, let's just say Breslow's interested, and let's just say he has the swagger to take advantage of a Mike Hazen type guy. He doesn't, but let's pretend for a minute. We've got other podcasters pretending that Casas is going to hit 37 home runs this year, by the way. So why don't we play pretend with this? But what are we going to give up? Because you've already mentioned Tolian early. I'm going to be like, no one's going to get hosed on this. So why are we going to get hosed? Why are we going to put two painful guys in there? So let's just take Tolian early out. So are we willing to give up a Brian Baio type guy? Like, I mean, I'd rather do that than the other two, but at the same time, I don't trust Sonny Gray. I don't trust Johan Oviedo. I just don't know that you're strong enough to deal from the upper end of your rotation here to do that. So I don't know. I'll put Baio in the maybe category, but I think if you tell me right now you're getting Marte, whether you like it or not, I would almost rather put Meyer in that deal because he's not healthy. And I don't know how much value he's going to have a year from now if he only plays 80 to 100 games. You're eventually going to get to Casas level trade value. So, I mean, if we get Marte and we're stuck with him for, I think, the next 4 to 5 years, I'd rather sacrifice a Marcelo Meyer type guy than elite pitchers. That's where I'm at with this. I mean, I'd tell Arizona, listen, that's not what you want. That's not what you wanted, but maybe you need a Marcelo Meyer type guy, you know, and maybe that'll work out for you. And you've got depth guys like Cutter Crawford. I mean, if you could look into a crystal ball and say, okay, he's definitely going to be healthy going forward, he's potentially a number three type guy. He could be. Anyway, I'd say that's what his ceiling is, rather. A Patrick Sandoval type guy, you know, I don't know if Arizona wants to take on, you know, $10 million or $12 million, whatever it is, but he is a guy that could help them. And I thought there was one more guy I had in mind, but that's what I'm doing. They're not getting Tolley or early. Maybe they'll get Baio. Maybe. Oh, Oviedo was the type of guy you could flip him. I don't know if Arizona would even like him, but you could, if Breslow somehow trades the password, Yostinson Garcia, and somehow ends up with Ketel Marte as a result of it, now it's not a head scratcher. So I don't know. So those are the names I'm kind of kicking around, but I would take full advantage of the fact that nobody else is willing to pay either. So this is what we're willing to offer. Take it or leave it.
I agree. You know, Dobbins was a name that I would have put in the trade before we traded him. You know, Baio is a guy I would absolutely part with, I think, in that deal. Really, early and Tolley are my untouchables. You know, that and that's probably it, barring obviously like something ridiculous like Crochet or Anthony or something like that. That's just out there at this point. When it comes to a guy like Crochet or Anthony, though, who I feel have such proven success, despite being so young, they have such proven success that they're here to stay. And Tolley and early, they have such potential, you know, that we believe that they will capitalize on this year and many years going forward. I feel like not every player exhibits that. And Meyer, unfortunately, is one of those. I love his defense. I love his composure. I love his personality and I love his potential, but for a strong infielder such as Marte guaranteed for the next, you know, 5-6 years, obviously going from age 32 towards like 37, being the one drawback, I do think that I would put Meyer in that deal, but only if it meant, you know, like Meyer, Duran and Baio feels like too much for me. Almost, you know, trading all three of those guys. It would sort of be a 2 out of the 3 take it or leave it situation for me.
I agree.
Yeah, and I think you have to remember Arizona, their pitching is depleted. They lost a lot of pitching the last year. Zach Gallen's gone. Merrill Kelly is gone. You know, they still got Eduardo Rodriguez there, but how reliable is that? Brandon Pfaadt turned out to be a nice, you know, young pitcher, but they really don't have much else. So they're going to prioritize pitching over a guy like Meyer. And again, they already have a shortstop. They've got Geraldo Perdomo, who's actually a really good player. And he's also a switch hitter. I think he's only 27 years old. So they've got him. They've got, Jordan Lawler, who's, you know, one of their top draft picks from a couple of years ago. You know, he's starting to make his way up, and you know, I think they've already toyed around with, if they did trade Marte, they'd put him at second base. So they may not want a guy like Marcelo Meyer, who, as you guys have pointed out, like, hasn't proven he can stay healthy, hasn't proven that he can be a consistent player, and nobody knows if he can hit lefties because Alex Cora won't let him. So he may not have as much value as Tolley and Early and, you know, some of these other pitchers in the Red Sox system. And I feel like, you know, I was okay with parting with Richard Fitz. I didn't love giving up Hunter Dobbins, but I kind of understood why. I'm not sure I want to part with that much more pitching. Like, it's hard to stockpile good, young, controllable pitching in this league. And I feel like, you know, the Red Sox the last couple of years have actually done a pretty good job of it. But now it's like they're starting to give him away again. I'm like, well, hold on. Like, injuries can happen fast, and you can find yourself needing to call up Cooper Criswell's agents again in June to see if you can trade back for him or something. Like, so I don't want them just giving away pitchers for offense. Yes, you still have holes on offense you need to fix, but pitching depth is so underrated in that league. So, you know, even guys like a Tyler Uberstein, who's a bit of an, you know, older prospect, kind of a journeyman down there in Worcester, like, his name's been thrown around as a guy that could be included in trade packages. And, you know, he doesn't have electric stuff. He doesn't throw very hard, but he's a solid option if, you know, if, again, if you get plagued with injuries, if Patrick Sandoval isn't ready to come back and it's James Paxton 2.0, if, you know, Crochet has to deal with something, because, again, has never pitched this much in his career. And, you know, there were times last year we thought, ooh, is he starting to slow down? And obviously he proved us wrong, but, you know, it's year two. I mean, Chris Sale did the same thing and then signed an extension. Look what happened. So it's never guaranteed. Health is never guaranteed for pitchers. So I just don't want them giving away too much. And I think there's other options that, you know, other ways you can go at second base instead of just sending a bunch of pitchers to Arizona for a guy who, again, might be a malcontent.
Yeah, I think that's all very valid. I mean, ultimately, you know, the pessimist says, well, it doesn't matter. It's not going to happen anyway. And I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, it's an interesting thought experiment at the very least. And it's kind of a shame how necessary it is to make that big splash right now. You know, this roster just has this gaping wound that needs plugging, man. And, you know, Marte is one of the very few and ever dwindling possible solutions. You know, the one other thing that we were talking about discussing on this episode, we've already alluded to a couple of times, but that is the wonderful news that Tristan Casas is taking swings again. We saw some video coming out, you know, him doing some practice runs in the cages and whatnot. And I don't know, it's funny, man, because first base was a black hole, you know, considered by many Sox fans. Some people have faith in Casas still. I did last year, not so much right now, personally. And now with Contreras, though, on the team, it seems like that is your everyday first baseman, and suddenly Casas becomes this depth piece. And it's so easy to go back and forth on this guy, because you look at Casas, and all you can see is the rose-tinted glasses. Well, some people, I should say, not necessarily us, but all you can see is the rose-tinted glasses of that 2023 campaign, right? His age 23 season, an absolutely monster step forward, pretty much his debut in terms of a full season of plate appearances. And then, unfortunately, a 24 campaign that was cut short and a 25 campaign that was cut short and wasn't even good leading up to that. Now, the guy is still young. He's only 25 years old going into his age 26 season. But a lot of people in the fan base, he's this incredibly polarizing player, right? Where you either say, get this dude off my team, I'm tired of hearing his name, I'm tired of having hope, or you sort of get the Candyland point of view, where, oh, this is going to be Casas's year, his eye, his power, he's finally going to put it all together and be the all-star first baseman or DH that the Red Sox need him to be. I definitely fall into one of those camps at this point, more than another, at least, maybe not entirely. But first, I would like to hear from you guys. What is the temperature check on Casas?
There is a disturbing amount of sacred cow treatment that Tristan Casas gets from this fan base and this organization. If it were up to Red Sox fans, they would rename the Bryan Adams song The Summer of 23, because that's all you hear about whenever anything Tristan Casas comes up. Even when he shatters his leg and is out, it's like, wow, well, but remember 2023? He was so good. He was good for half a summer. Like, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, the only time I remember Red Sox fans, like, kind of doing the blah about, you know, a guy's regular season was when Pedroia went on to win the MVP after having a bad April. I don't know if you guys remember that, but when he first came up, he was rough. Like, he looked like Tristan Casas always looks. He hit, like, 170, struck out, didn't play good defense, went on to win the MVP in the rookie of the year that year. Tristan Casas hasn't done that. He had half a summer of pretty good baseball. I'm not even going to call it great. Like, he wasn't an MVP candidate. He just didn't suck. He crossed the baseline of he didn't suck. That was it. Like, Franchi Cordero has done that in his career. So, it's just, I'm so sick of hearing about it. And here's the thing. I'm not telling you I want to get rid of him. It's actually quite the opposite. I want him starting the year in Worcester. Because now that you've got a true first baseman who's proven and, you know, is a good talent, right-handed hitter, so he fits the lineup a little bit better, give Tristan Casas as much time as he needs. Go down to Worcester, do your, you know, and if you're not ready, do your stupid dry swings or whatever the F you're going to do. You know, he's going to start wearing, like, samurai stuff over his eyes now, like, knowing him. But go down to Worcester, start the year down there, and let's see. Let's see what it looks like. Does he become a monster? Does he start absolutely tearing the cover off the ball down there? Or is he hitting 185 and not drawing walks? But hey, the exit velocity is up towards 100, so it's close. Like, are we going to be hearing that on May 31st? Oh, he's close. That's the thing. It doesn't matter. Like, you can be patient with Casas. You've got Wilson Contreras now. You're unfortunately stuck with Yoshida as your DH, and it'll probably be a rotating DH knowing Alex Cora. But you can be patient. And you know what? If he does go down there and he's ripping it up and he looks great, then, you know, we'll see what's going on with Yoshida by the time he's ready. But there's your DH. Because Contreras is better defensively. Tristan Casas is kind of a butcher over there. So, and given the injury, you probably don't want to rush him back anyway. So to me, it's like, I'm sick of hearing about him, but I'm not ready to just jettison him off the team. Because, Nick, you brought it up, like, he's 25 going on 26. Like, you don't give up on 25-year-olds. Even as much as I can't stand the guy, I'm not ready to give up on him. But I don't want him being penciled into the opening day lineup by anybody. Like, to me, he's got to go back to Worcester, prove that he's healthy, first of all, because who knows? I mean, that injury was so brutal. Like, I don't think he's going to be ready by spring training to actually get into regular game activity. So let him start in Worcester. Let him prove that he's healthy and see how he does, and then go from there. You have the flexibility to do that. What I'm done hearing about is, oh, get ready. It's going to be 2023 all over again. Like, no, it's not. It's most likely not. He might come up. He might contribute. He might be okay. But until he can stay healthy for a full season, we'll never know if he's going to be that 30-100 guy that everyone claims he is. He's never done it before. He has to do it at least once, and he's got to stay healthy. So let him go down to Worcester, start the year there, and, you know, see how it progresses. But, yeah, I know, just the dry swings and the, you know, everyone just, oh, look at Casas looks ripped. It's like, okay, like, he looked ripped, too, before he tried to run down the first baseline and fell apart like a bunch of building blocks. Like, let's see how it actually goes.
Yeah, I mean, he disappeared for a while, then he showed up looking like Nick, you know, in the taking swings. But I think the Contreras deal is, like, is everything about how I feel about him. Like, if he was, we were going into the season and he was our starting first baseman, it would be a nightmare, right? And I think everyone else, it would be a lot more talk about him, about how no one believes in him, how this is horrible. With Contreras there and us being able to send him down to Worcester or maybe start the year as a backup, you know, fringe DH, I think that's a lot, you know, it gives us a lot better feel about him, you know, when you don't have to rely on him to do so much when you know he's not going to produce that, right? But I'm with you with, you know, we don't have to get rid of him now. We don't have to, you know, talk about him like that now because he's not the starter. right? He's a backup. So what, I don't know what you expect out of a backup, but you know, I don't expect 30 home runs and 100 RBIs out of a backup. But it's almost like whatever he gives you now is kind of a bonus at this point. You know, if you send him down to Worcester and he starts really hitting, you bring him up and he can DH with Yoshida and whoever else. And, you know, and he can just be serviceable while Contreras plays a very good first base. Then, you know, I think the tide will start to change a little bit on how fans feel about him. Maybe his playing time will change a little bit, you know, but you're right. He has to start in Worcester and he's got to work his way up. But I think having Contreras on the team can let you feel a lot better about him than if we were going into the season with him as our starting first baseman.
So I think the fact that we still have Casas, we still have Duran, just speaks to the mess and the lack of direction that's going on in this front office right now. I just don't see how Casas fits. Yeah, you can absolutely send him down to Pawtucket and that'll buy you some time. But you've got two problems here. Number one, the Red Sox in the post-2018 era have not given you any examples or any precedent that they're willing to eat a ton of money. Just cut a guy loose and let him go. I really believe there's a standing order in this organization that we are done eating money. We're done with the Rusney Castillos. We're done with the Pablo Sandovals. These guys are staying on the books until we can make a move that makes sense. And nobody wants Yoshida. Nobody wants him. And last season, before Story just magically woke up at the start of June, the beat writers were all giving you the impression that he could be DFA'd in a matter of days here. It's just gotten to be so bad. He couldn't catch up to the fastball. Just looked totally lost. Couldn't hit the ball hard. Had no power. And then finally he woke up. And so you've got that problem. Yoshida's not coming off of DH. I know Alex Cora said, well, he still has his outfield glove. He said that a couple of times. Okay, so Yoshida's going to take time from Anthony, Rafaela, Duran, Abreu. Like, all right, don't feed us that. All right, we're not buying any of that. So I just don't see how Casas fits in. You got Contreras now for the next two seasons. At that point, at the end of Contreras' deal, Casas will be in his final year of arbitration. So that's how that timeline is going to play out. I don't know what you do with him. I just think his presence is a net negative. I think he makes Alex Cora's job a lot more difficult because Cora has to drop everything and address the stupid quote that Casas gave to the beat writers. You know, the getting caught in a lie, literally last, or was it the season before last, getting caught in a lie that he had taken over 1,000 swings only for him to say, no, I took those swings in my mind. Like that's not the shit we need. And so, you know, he would be an okay third piece in a package. Your third piece is typically going to be a lottery ticket type guy. Maybe you'll hit it big with him. Maybe you won't at all, but he's not getting paid anything really. So it's not really a huge risk. And Craig Breslow has not done a good job this winter dealing with housekeeping, you know, getting this team cleaned up, getting the roster more streamlined. So I don't know what's going to happen with him, but he's not going to, Wilson Contreras is your first baseman. He will be your starting first baseman for the majority of 2026. So for those other podcasters out there, just hype dreaming that Casas is going to hit 37 home runs, you're stupid. Okay. We're going to be a little bit more realistic about it on our show. And I just don't see how it's going to play out. The pieces just don't fit.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that Tristan Casas is kind of the MLB equivalent of Kyle Pitts, in the sense that every year you constantly hear, this is his year. This is this guy's year. Everybody, just keep yourself buckled in. This is his year. Casas had one of those years and unfortunately failed to replicate it in any capacity over the next two. And, you know, I feel like we got a nice dose of reality last offseason. No one in the league wants this guy. We're stuck with him, unfortunately. He's kind of like, what do they call one of those gifts? Like a white elephant or something like that. You know, when you just have this thing that no one wants, you know, and you're stuck with it, unfortunately. You can't even give the thing away. You know, Tristan Casas does have upside. Don't get me wrong. I've got nothing against the guy as a dude. You know, I do think his antics, he's a bit of a weirdo. You know, I don't think that I'm alone in thinking that. I think even he would probably admit to that. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, especially when you're winning. But when you start to have struggles, those idiosyncrasies in your personality, they start to get exposed and they can start to grate, as we've seen across the fan base. Like I said before, he's a very polarizing figure for good reason, I think. You know, Casas's value right now is at the lowest it has ever been. And hopefully at the lowest it will ever be. I agree. Start the guy in AAA. Let him get healthy. Let him get consistent playing time. And hopefully he's able to get back into shape, maybe alongside a guy like Christian Campbell, maybe alongside guys, you know, down there who, you know, they can be impact players for us down the line when injuries inevitably happen. Maybe Yoshida doesn't perform, but I agree with Terry, unfortunately, that we're kind of stuck with that. That's another white elephant on the roster, you know? So it's just one of those things where I want Casas to succeed so badly, both for us, selfishly, right, Red Sox fans, but also for him, because, dude, please get this monkey off your back. Go out there and have a great year and maybe get traded to the Mariners or a team like that, you know, maybe go to Arizona, who knows, but I don't know, man. It's just, I'm tired of the false hope because I totally understand positivity. I totally get hype, but at the end of the day, you can only hype up a guy so much before it just becomes a pipe dream. And it almost does a detriment to that player because you're setting the expectations higher. If we just set the bar for Casas as he's a replacement level guy, he's cheap, he still has options, you know, all this, he can only go up from there, hopefully, right? If we're saying this guy's going to finally have his first, I'm pretty sure his first 30 home run season, I don't think he did even in 2023, you know, then we're just setting ourselves up for failure.
So for what it's worth, that second half of 23, Casas hit .317, 15 homers, and his on base was, I just had it, sorry, .417. Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. Bobby Dalbec, second half of 2021, .269, so lower batting average. He did strike out a lot. That was a Dalbec problem. .344 on base, 15 home runs. So, again, anytime you bring up Bobby Dalbec, the Tristan Casas people, like, oh my God, they poo their diaper. They get really upset about it. Oh, they're not the same player. Well, they kind of were for 1 year because everyone thought Bobby Dalbec had like 40 home run power. And he was, before Casas, he was the guy that just, you know, he was the guy that like everyone thought, wow, they really got something here. And they didn't. Sometimes he's just not the guy and that's okay. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I'm kind of on the leading towards the no category on that one.
Dalbec can't even make the White Sox.
You know who he can make, though? He can make the Yomi Yori Giants, baby! I was joking with my friends. I was like, dude, if I could, because last year I went to see a Giants game in Japan, which was awesome. I was like, dude, imagine if we could have bought a Dalbec jersey in, you know, in Japan, how funny that would have been.
If only...
would have been sick.
If only Casas had Dalbec's durability, common sense, and self-awareness, you'd have Wilson Contreras wouldn't be here right now. So it's kind of a bummer. So my final take on that, you know, if you're trying to be a realist here, the only way Costas has any future whatsoever with the Boston Red Sox is if Masataka Yoshida crushes it in camp and has a great April and May to where you can move him now. Teams will be like, okay, you get roughly a season and a half, and maybe not even that, maybe only a half a season. You know, maybe they'll take on, you know, that contract, and you finally get rid of Yoshida, and now Costas is your DH. That's the only way. That's the only way, Tristan Costas, short of Yoshida or Contreras getting hurt, actually. If none of those things happen, I don't see how you don't move him. And we're all just prisoners of an incompetent Red Sox front office right now that doesn't know how to do the most basic of operational moves.
Yeah, we're a lopsided team. You know, we have this excess in the outfield that we've been unable to benefit from pretty much. And so, you know, you see the rumors, you see the speculation, Rafaela to second base, Duran to second base. And it's just ridiculous that we're in a position to have to say things like that rather than, well, what are you talking about? Marte's our guy. or what are you talking about? Meyer's our guy, because we got Bregman over at third. You know, I just saw a great, you know, video of Meyer getting into shape and all this stuff. And right now, you know, he can only play one position. I said that, I think, on the last show that I was on, and I got to say it again. The dude can play shortstop or second base or third base for you. You know, he's rangy, but he can't play all three, you know, and unfortunately this roster is sort of forcing that onto the guy.
Yeah, and for whatever it's worth, I don't know how much intel he gets from the team or from the higher-ups, but Lou Maloney has suddenly become a huge advocate of Sadon at second base and moving Duran to center. Take that for what it's worth, but he's, like, never brought it up before. And his, like, past three dog walk videos, he's like, yeah, no, Sadon can play second base, and he'll be really good at it. And people forget that Duran was gold glove caliber at center field. So, again, I don't know if he's hearing things that they're out on Marte and they're thinking about doing that, but when I hear a team broadcaster who's kind of in the know say, oh, yeah, no, all of a sudden, let's take our gold glove center fielder and stick him in the out in the infield, I'm like, oh, that scares me a little bit.
Well, I thought I'd mentioned that on at least one or two previous shows. Maybe I mentioned it in the war room. I don't remember. But if you're trying to make the pieces fit, and Duran's definitely not getting traded, that's the only way to do it. And it's not ideal because you love that outfield defense, but he's also a drastic improvement on your infield defense. Like, nobody at second base is athletic as he is. Shortstop, I think, what was it, last year, the year, or 2 years ago, rather, didn't work out so good. And maybe it would have over time, but if Duran's going to be on the roster, you're playing Anthony every day. They're saying they want to play Willie Abreu every day. Christian Campbell still has a pulse. I mean, you got to play him somewhere. What are we doing? That's what I mean. This team is a mess right now. It's just a total mess. And I'm not going to lie, I'm not even against trading Rafaela at this point. I think he's a nothing bat. I think his offensive numbers will probably be worse than Jackie Bradley's. That's the direction I think he's trending. And, you know, the defense can justify a lot of things, but, you know, in the right deal, I would do it. It frees up a little bit of money, which apparently is important. So I don't know, but I think that's the easiest way to free up your outfield a little bit, as hard to imagine as that is.
It's like they're going the Boston Celtics route and just acquiring players and saying we're playing positionless ball.
Positionless baseball. That's what Breslow is going to invent here. Yeah, it's a shame. We're just in a catch 22, you know, and it is completely self-inflicted. This jam is entirely self-inflicted. That's the most frustrating part. So, you know, right now, for those of you who are audio only, I'm a bit of a shaggy dog at the moment. I think I'm going on strike. I'm going to look like one of those monks, you know, or something like, or a hermit, you know, up in the hills. I'm not going to shave until the Red Sox make a trade. And so I'll be looking like Rip Van Winkle, you know, by the time Breslow actually does something. But, oh man, I don't know. We're lucky right now. I've got to say, we're lucky that Bregman and Bichette didn't both just bam sign contracts, you know, around the same time Cease did, right? Because if those guys were off the board, you know, you're talking about how Breslow has no leverage right now. That would be a zero leverage situation. At least this way, hey, maybe, who knows? Bregman, how about another 3-year deal with opt-outs? But, you know, it's tough because I looked at the 2027 draft class, or not draft class, excuse me, the free agent class. That's not looking good. Not when it comes to bats, certainly. So if we're looking for a solution, it's got to be multi-year. And whether that comes via trade or free agency, you just have to figure something out, because 2027 isn't going to save you. And if you're talking about waiting until 2028, you're talking about missing certain windows, potentially wasting really good years from guys like Anthony or Crochet, or even a guy like Early, you know? So that's where we're at. Closing thoughts, fellas.
I'm going to predict that Mikey Romero is going to be the new Worcester darling of 2026, because I don't know what we're going to do at second base, but he is a second baseman and he rocketed up the rankings this past summer. And yeah, if we've got like Sadon playing second base, hitting 195, get ready for Mikey Romero talk big time.
Happy New Year to all the bastards.
Fire Breslow.
That does it then. Yeah. Thank you everyone for joining us, listening in, commenting along. We do appreciate it. It's been Nick, Jason, Doug, and Terry. We've been the Bastards of Boston. Hope everyone has a great new year. 2025 coming to a close has been a wild ride from start to finish for Red Sox fans everywhere. Hopefully 2026 is a little less wild, and you know, hopefully come you know, this time next year, we're all getting off the duck boat. But you know, fingers crossed. Take care, everyone. Happy New Year. Stay safe. And go Red Sox.